The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Kisser Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Micha Cohen.
Simen Kuf Mem Zayin, Minhage Chuppah. In the last siman, we discussed the parts of the wedding leading up to the chuppah. And now, in this siman, the kitzer is going to talk to us about some of the customs of the chuppah. Now, it's interesting that the kitzer doesn't really discuss the actual ceremony. And so, we'll learn the kitzer, and then we'll add in a little bit about the actual wedding ceremony. Sif Aleph. Noyagin lasos ha-chuppah tachas ha-shamayim l'siman bracha. There's a custom to do the chuppah under the heavens as a siman bracha. So some people in some halls, they try to do the chuppah actually outside. Obviously, if it's raining, that's going to be a problem. Some places have some sort of skylight or window. In many places, they don't do this at all, but there is this custom. And what's the reason? Because the pasuk says, the Torah says, that your children should be like the stars of heaven. And so therefore, to do it under the heavens sort of signifies the idea of this pasuk. The kitzer continues, V'chei noegin she'ein noisim isha ela b'mila halavana. That there's a custom not to get married only when the month is filling out, meaning to say the later part of the month. L'simen toiv as a good simen. Now, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah talks about this custom, and in many places they weren't careful about this at all, and they got married any time of the month. In certain communities, they were more careful about this, and each community should follow its custom. Let's continue with Sif Beis. Kashra Dovar, it's proper, Shaloiti Nasi Ashatitar, that the kala, the bride, should be ritually pure at the wedding, meaning to say that she shouldn't be a nida. Now, obviously, relations are prohibited if the bride is a nida. The question is, is it important for the bride to be ritually pure at the time of the wedding? Now, the reason why the kitzer says it's proper is because, according to all opinions, a kedushin, the first part of the marriage, that can be done when the wife is a nida. However, according to one opinion, according to the opinion of the Rambam, Nisuin, the second part, is not binding if the wife is a nida. Now, in many places in Lithuania and Lita, they weren't careful at all with the opinion of the Rambam. And there are those that tried to at least see to it that the bride should be ritually pure in order to fulfill the opinion of the Rambam. Now, some are of the opinion that this whole issue is only if the bride is actually her second marriage, actually she's a widow. But if she's a basula, if she's a virgin, then it wouldn't be an issue at all. So again, this is a matter of different communities, but the bottom line is that it's definitely okay for a woman to get married if she's not ritually pure, but we do try to see as much as possible that she should be tahar at the time of the wedding. And says the kitzer exactly what we just said, that the prevalent custom is not to be necessarily so careful about this opinion of the Rambam. Nonetheless, it's good to let the husband know, the groom know, before the chuppah that she's richly impure, because obviously, once they're married, you don't want him to think that she's richly pure, and to do something that would be prohibited during that time. Let's continue with Sif Gimel. The custom in these countries, when a virgin gets married, that the distinguished people of the city cover the head of the bride with a kerchief from a varchim oisa, and they give her a blessing. And they say, "Achiseinu, our sister, ati heil alfi revava." This is the blessing that Lavan gave to his daughter when she was going to marry Yaakov. The chuppah, Karin Masha Acher Kach, person Yiriyah al-Gabi Klein Sais. And he says, what is considered the chuppah? Well, after this first ceremony where they cover the kala, this is what we know as the bedekan, right? So after that ceremony, they then stand under the canopy, under the chuppah, and the bride and groom stand underneath it in front of everyone, and he performs the kedushin, umavarchin sham brachas erusin nesuin, and they recite the shara brachas. This is called chuppah. Well, ikra chuppah hu hayichud, but the main chuppah is the actual yichud sheisbara imir tashem mesim shacharzeh. Now, this is a very quick running through what's going on under the chasana with a lot of different opinions, and let's go through this carefully to explain what's going on. At most Ashkenazi weddings, the first after the ksuba and the tanoim are signed in the chasan's room, as we mentioned before, and the kala is in a different place greeting her guests. So then the chasan, together with the guests, come to the kala, and he covers her face with the veil. Now, if you'll notice, the kitzur doesn't say that the chasan covers her face with the veil, with the kerchief. It says that the chashuvei ha'ir, that the distinguished people of the city, and this is a question of custom. In certain communities, it's done by the Masadr Kedushin, actually, and he gives the bracha, as the kitzur says. But in many communities, it's the chassan, it's the groom who does it. Now, there's a very good reason for the groom to do it, because according to some opinions, the idea of the chassan covering the bride's face with the veil actually shows a symbol of marriage, and therefore, once they go under the chuppah and he gives her the ring and makes her mekudeshes, makes her his wife, and that's the first stage called kedushin, then the fact that he had before covered her with the veil and sort of demonstrated that she is his wife, that helps to create the nesu'in, according to some opinions. So that's the first step. Before the actual chuppah, there's what's known as the badekin, where the chassan or someone else covers the face of the kala with a veil. Now, one of the reasons why the kala wears the veil, one of them we mentioned, is because that the story with Rachel and Leah, that Leah was, that Laban covered Rachel's face, so therefore Yaakov didn't know who she was. But another reason is also that there was a concern that when the chassan gives the kala expensive jewelry under the chuppah, that she might think that she's getting something more valuable than it's really worth, and she's going to sort of base her decision on that, and it could raise a question as far as the validity of the marriage. So therefore, the idea of her covering her face is to show that she's not concerned about the jewelry that she's getting. She doesn't care how much the value is. And therefore, that was another some reason why they had a custom to cover the face of the bride. Now, there are actually two important steps in the wedding ceremony. And the first is known as Kedushin, and the second one is Nesu'in. Kedushin, in the times of the Talmud and the times of the Gemara, would take place approximately a year before the actual wedding, which would mean to say that basically the couple agrees to marry, and he performs what's called kedushin. He gives the wife something, the future wife, something of significant value, whether it's a ring, whether it's money or something else. And by doing that, the Torah tells us that she becomes his wife, in the sense that there's a prohibition of eishes ish, that the prohibition of adultery, and they're considered to be more than just engaged, more like betrothed, and she's considered his wife as far as the prohibition of Eishes Ish, but they're not married in the sense that they're not living together, and they're not permitted to have relations until the next part of the marriage, known as Nisuin, takes place. Now, there's a big discussion as far as what is Nisuin exactly, and this is what the Kitzer was touching upon here. Is Nisuin Yichud? Is Nisuin being the husband and wife being secluded in a room by themselves? And that shows yichud, or is it being under the wedding canopy? Does that show yichud, or perhaps something else? So what the kitzur writes over here is that the chuppah is this, the canopy, and But according to the opinion of the Kitzur, the main chuppah, the main idea of the nesu'in, this second part of the marriage, actually comes later at the time of the yichud, which really the next siman, the next lesson in the Kitzur is going to talk more about. Now, there is a discussion, I believe, in some Sephardic communities, they don't do yichud right after the chuppah. You know, in many Ashkenazi circles, the way it works is that right after the chuppah, the chassan and kal, the bride and groom, go into a private room. They spend a few minutes there together, and that is considered yichud. That's considered the completion of the marriage ceremony. There are those that have the custom that they go straight to the meal. And I remember seeing the Yabia Omer, Chaim Avadia Yosef, he discusses this. And basically he says that the understanding of many paiskim, of many opinions, is that the chuppah itself is enough to constitute the idea of yichu, of the idea of nesu'in, of the finalizing the marriage, and therefore you don't need the actual yichud. The Kitzur also here mentions the fact that they recite under the chuppah the Sheva Brachas, and what we'll do is, after we finish reading the Kitzur, we'll go through step by step exactly what happens under the chuppah. Siv Dalet. Hashush Binim are the people that help out the bride and groom. Malbishim Esachas and Bekittel, so the chas and the groom wears a kittel, that's the white garment that they wear on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Pesach. Kadesh Yisro Yom HaMisa, because that's also a garment that a person after 120 years is dressed in when they're buried. V'yisar b'tshuva, and it's to remind him of doing tshuva. You know, it's to bring in that seriousness. Gam Noigin Lasses Ofer Beresh Chosen B'Mokam Anachas Tefillin. The custom is to put ash on the head of the chosen in the place where he wears the tefillin. And the reason is because to remember the Churban Bayis, to remember that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. V'gam Noigin Sha'ovas V'akrevim V'anshei Tzurim V'varchim as the chosen V'akala. It's a custom that the parents and other important people bless the bride and groom with Spalam Aleim, and they pray for them Shazivugam Yali Yofe, that the marriage should work out well. Sifhei. Achakach malichin as a chosen tachas a chuppah, and afterwards, so now he's dressed in his kittel already, and they bring the chosen underneath the wedding canopy, shaparas and yiri al gabi. Kolein asayis, that they take a cloth or a sheet, and they put it over poles. Shanokar a chuppah, this is what we call the chuppah. Mamidin aysepon of the mizrach. And we have him face the east. Now, there were different customs as far as how the chassan and kala would face. In most places, it's very common that the chassan and kala, the bride and groom, face the people. And the Masad and Kedush, the one officiating, his back is towards the people. One of the reasons for that is because in say, other religions, let's say Christianity, usually the bride and groom, they face their backs face the congregation during the wedding ceremony. So in order to be different than the non-Jews, the custom always was that the bride and groom, they faced the people. I believe the German Jews actually have a custom of the opposite, and obviously each place goes according to its custom. There's a similar discussion about whether or not to have a chuppah in a shul, which again had to do with the same idea that was also something that was considered in certain places to be more of a non-Jewish custom, because marriages weren't necessarily done in shul, they were done in a hall, wherever it was, and the idea of having marriages in a place of worship was something that was more Christian, and there were those that felt very strongly against it. And again, the German Jews and others, you know, very God-fearing people, they had the custom to have it in shul, and many people today do have it in shul, and obviously, once again, each one should follow their custom. Now, the Kitzur mentions that the Shleach Tzibor, that the one who's singing, should sing the songs, you know, Baruch Haba, Mi Bon Siach, these songs, according to the custom of the place, Vashish Binos, Melich HaSakala, and then the bride comes with her people escorting her, you know, usually the parents, Vashish Binim, Vanshich, Vanashim Chashuvim, Holchim Lakrasa, and the people come to greet her, and then when they get close, chayzun lacharem lachupa, then they go back to the chupa. Vashish binos mevias as a kala masavvois ima sheva pa'am es chasan. So then this is one of the most well-known parts of the chupa, that basically the chasan walks down and he stands under the chupa, and then the chasan sings baruch haba, and then the kala comes shortly afterwards, and the chasan takes a few steps to greet the kala, and then she goes with him under the chuppah, and the kala goes around the chasan 7 times. There's different reasons for this custom. Some say because they're like creating a new world, and so therefore that's the idea of the 7 times. And the Keser continues, Varsich tzibur menagin gamken kafi aminag, and again they say Bruch haba, and then he sings the piyutim that's normally sung, V'achachach mabinimidim esachach kala imin hachasan, and then they have the kala stand on the right of the chasan, V'mavarach mitzadet es asmoi upon of l'mizrach, and the one who gives the blessing stands sort of to the side. Now, I'd just like to take a couple minutes to review and sort of organize, you know, the exactly what happens halachically at during a wedding ceremony. So again, after the badek and after the chasan comes and covers the face of the kala, so now they're going to go under the chuppah. So as we just mentioned from the kitzer, the chasan is escorted to the chuppah, and he stands under the chuppah, and then the kala comes and she's escorted, the chasan comes to greet her, and they're both standing under the chuppah, and then the kala goes around him 7 times, and that's all important customs that we have, the different piyutim, different liturgy is said, and that's all more of the ceremony of it, meaning minhagim, customs. Now, as far as the more legally binding aspects of it, so what happens is the following. The first stage is kedushin, it's betrothal, and that's when the chasan gives the kala the ring, and by that he makes her into a ashes ish, into a married woman. Now, the Masada Kedushin, the one officiating, they call up the Masada Kedushin to officiate, and the Gemara tells us that Misha Eina Yedea Betiv Gittin U Kedushin Ayyihila Esekimam. A person does not know well the laws of Gittin, marriage, and laws of divorce, should not have what to do with it. And the reason is because Evan Ezra, this area of halacha is something that, although on the surface it looks very procedural, things could arise that are very complicated and very serious. We're dealing with the whole idea of lineage and issues of mamzeros and very serious things. So therefore, even though on the surface it looks very simple, but in reality things could go wrong, and therefore a person needs to be well versed. Now, there is a question: is this, you know, today when you have, you know, sort of written out what the procedure should be, and maybe you have it's possible for you to call someone if you have a question, you call a bigger rabbi, so is that enough? And obviously a person officiating should be someone that at least has a significant background in halacha and Jewish law in general. You know, he should have a smicha, should be ordained, but besides that, it's important that if anything does arise that he's not so sure about, that he should have who to ask and be knowledgeable, at least to know what could possibly be a question that he could then go and call someone who would be able to help him with the answer. So the job of the Masada Kedushin, of the one officiating, is to make sure that the wedding is done according to halacha. Now, the first thing the Masada Kedushin does when he goes up there is he makes a bracha known as Berachas Chasanim, and that bracha is that the Gemara tells us that Kala B'lei Bracha Asur Kanita. There's a bracha, is a blessing that they made at the time of the Kedushin. And he makes this bracha. It's a very important bracha. According to the Gemara, without it, the Kala is not permitted to her husband. He makes this bracha. And then the Chasan goes and puts the ring on the finger of the Kala. Now, at that point, the giving of the ring has to be witnessed by 2 kosher witnesses. That means they cannot be family members. They should be people that, you know, take their Yiddishkeit, you know, seriously. They keep Shabbos and Kashrus properly. Now, there's a question that if in the crowd you have relatives and you have all sorts of people who may not be kosher witnesses, so how does it work as far as if everyone's seeing it together, then the fact that everyone's seeing it together could invalidate the other one, because you have a group of witnesses, and some of the witnesses are invalid, and that potentially could invalidate the other ones. So because of this concern, the custom is to set aside two specific witnesses that are kosher, and they're the main witnesses to see the giving of the ring. So they call up the two witnesses, and sometimes the rabbi officiating will ask the witnesses, do they think the ring is valuable, you know, at least worth the basic amount, and they'll say yes. And he'll ask the groom perhaps if it's his, did he acquire it properly? Yes. Okay, now the groom places the ring on the finger of the kala. Actually, he says beforehand the famous words, Harei at mekudesh asli, you are betrothed to me, kedas betabazu, with this ring, kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, according to the law of Moshe and Yisrael. And that's a very important thing he has to say. There is a question, if he doesn't say it properly, is that an issue? And he says that properly and clearly, and he places the ring on her finger, and the Masad HaKadushin many times will say Mazel Tov, he'll say, or Mekudeshes, he'll say that, oh, it was properly done. So now she is Mekudeshes, now she is betrothed. There are a number of interesting questions as far as, do the witnesses have to see the face of the bride, right? If the bride has a thin veil, then they could see through the veil, but let's say she has a thick veil. The question is an interesting one. The question is, they see, obviously, that there's a woman here that's receiving this ring, but if they would have to testify in court, they really didn't see what she looks like, so they couldn't really recognize her. So some feel that they should see the face of the bride. Others feel, no, it's inappropriate. And again, this is, you know, each Masada Kedushin, each rabbi officiating will do it according to his, you know, his understanding. But this is another of the interesting discussions that are discussed. Another thing is, as far as the ring, we mentioned before that we don't want the kala, the bride, to think that she's getting something that's of more value than it is. So because of that, the custom is not to use a ring that has a stone on it, because the stones, people don't know the exact value of them necessarily. Therefore, she could think it's a very expensive stone, and it's not. So therefore, we don't use a stone. We also don't use a ring that has certain types of engraving on it, because, again, you might think that the value of the ring is because of the engraving, and really the engraving is not so valuable. So they use a plain, simple gold ring. That's what's generally used. So now, that's the first stage, and that's called Kedushin. Now, before the Nesu'in takes place, the next stage where they actually become fully husband and wife, there's an idea of sort of separating the Kedushin from the Nesu'in. Now, in the old days, that would be actually a whole year in between. In the times of the Gemara, they would have this Kedushin, and then they would wait a whole year, and then the Nesu'in would take place. Today, we symbolically, to show the difference, we read the Ksuba in between. Now, reading the Ksuba is really just a formality, because because the reading of it is not really anything significant, but the custom is to call up a distinguished rabbi to read it, and he reads it, and that sort of breaks up the Kedushin and the Suin. Then the groom takes that Ksuba, that marriage document, and he gives it to the bride, and by doing that, when she acquires it, like any legal document, but her acquiring it becomes binding, and he's obligated himself in the obligations of a husband to a wife, and vice versa. At that point, the Nesu'in at least is somewhat taken place already, and part of the idea is that we mentioned that there's different opinions as to what creates the Nesu'in, but according to many opinions, the very fact that they're standing under this chuppah would create the Nesu'in, because it's like his home, and therefore he brought her into his home, and therefore that's considered the Nesu'in. And then afterwards, the seven brachas, the seven sheva brachas are said, and they call up different people to recite them. And then, as a remembrance of Yerushalayim, the Gemara tells us that even at a very happy time, you shouldn't get carried away, so therefore the chasan breaks a glass, and that usually concludes the chuppah. From there, the couple, at least according to the Ashkenazi custom, will go into yichud, will go to be secluded for a few minutes, which, according to other opinions, is the final step of the marriage ceremony.